Hello, I'm Donald Johannesson, and thanks for joining me on Speaking Out. In the 2013 federal budget, $15 million was approved to the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples to secure its autonomous operations. But the Indigenous Affairs Minister Nigel Scullion announced his government is unlikely to release the funding.
The Labor Party committed $15 million in the future to Congress. We did not.
And the nation's best Indigenous cricketers again vie for the Impaja Cup in Alice Springs. But first, new music from South Australia's Crystal Mercy with a song called Green Cherries. That was Crystal Mercy with a song called Green Cherries from her debut album called The Fisherman's Daughter.
Speaking Out.
On air since 1990.
Speaking Out.
Discover Indigenous culture.
On ABC Local Radio.
Since 2010, the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples has been given $29 million to speak on behalf of Indigenous Australians. Unlike the former statutory authority of the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Commission, the Congress fights for the economic, social, cultural and political rights of Indigenous Australians. Co-chair Les Melzer has been touring the country to host meetings to inform its members and the public of the latest developments.
We were having very urgent meetings with our membership and also the public to talk about the future of Congress. We went to all of the capital cities except Darwin and also the regional centres in Townsville and Alice Springs. My co-chair colleague, Kirsty Parker, travelled to some of these and I travelled to the other ones. And the message we were saying was, if you heard that the government was not going to give funding to Congress, don't panic because it's not the end of Congress. We were making it clear that the government has no power to close down Congress, that Congress can sustain itself for the years ahead, and that people should be resting assured that Congress will still be acting as their national representative body and pursuing the rights of four Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
And just on that point, can you explain the role of the National Congress?
Yes, well, in fact, it's important to keep on emphasising that Congress has not been established to be an advisory body to government. There are still rumours going out there and people who are saying that the government established Congress to be an advisory body. That is so far from the truth, because Congress was not set up by government, it was set up by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. It's a company, it's not a statutory authority, and only the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander members of Congress can make any changes to the structure. Only the members can choose the representatives that sit on the boards in the chambers of Congress, and only the members can decide to alter the constitution or close Congress down itself. Clearly, people have to understand that this is an organisation set up at the national level by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. The second point is that the constitution of Congress is clear about its purposes. It's not to advise government, it's actually to fight for the rights of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So we're tasked with going out to ensure that people can exercise their rights and that those rights are respected in Australia. Of course, that puts us in contact with government, but often across the other side of the table, not beside them, as we try and get government to change its practices, as well as try to get government to support self-determination through technical and financial assistance to our communities. So these are the purposes of Congress. We're not a service delivery organisation. We're not there to go and solve people's legal problems or health problems or housing problems and so on. We're there to ensure that they are empowered to run their own decision-making through their own forms of government.
I'm Donald Johannesson, and this is Speaking Out, and I'm speaking to co-chair Les Melzer from the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. In December 2013, the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Senator Nigel Scullion, said his government is unlikely to release to the Congress $15 million that was approved in the 2013 budget. Can you explain why they're not releasing this $15 million?
Offered no reason, but then he turned around and said, well, the government can't afford it. Now, we don't accept in Aboriginal affairs for any excuse that it can be you can't afford it. One of the responsibilities that the nation of Australia took on in taking over the country of the First Peoples is that it had an obligation to see that our peoples continued to survive, our languages, our education, our health, our well-being, and so on. So the government has an obligation, regardless of how things are faring for the government and its budgets and treasuries and so on, has an obligation to ensure that our peoples enjoy the same rights, freedoms and equality with the citizenship of Australia. And to say that we don't have enough money to do that means that government is giving away its responsibility. The other thing, Don, that I'll add to that is that when Congress was formed, the proposal was put to the government at the time that there ought to be an investment fund created so that Congress could be financially independent and operate without government control through contracts, funding contracts and so on. The government at the time didn't agree. The government said that they would just give us an establishment grant for 3 years, which they did do. And then when that 3 years was running to an end, we told the government we have not yet been able to establish because the government didn't give us the ability to raise funds with tax deductions. And they only gave us that ability about 5 months ago. So the government, that's why the government agreed in that budget in 2013 to provide an additional amount. But now, after the elections, this government is saying, well, it might have been approved by the parliament in the budget, but we're not going to release you the money. That's the story.
What's going to happen now to the Congress?
We've crunched down numbers. We've got enough there to last for 3 years. We've got to cut back significantly, but we will survive. And we will not be closing down just because the government has decided it doesn't want to give us any money.
Have you or your co-chair, Kirsty Parker, approached the Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs again about this issue?
Oh, we have. Look, we've had a number of meetings with the minister, with his office, with the bureaucrats. We've had exchanges of correspondence and so on. So we, even though it's only a short period of time since this all started with the different government, we've been very, very active on it. We've had a number of meetings with Shane Newman. Shane Newman has actually come out publicly and said that he supports Congress and that Congress should get that funding that was in the budgets. And he's also made a number of other positive statements.
Les Melzer, co-chair of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. The Federal Member for Blair and Shadow Minister for Indigenous Affairs and Ageing, Shane Newman, went to a public meeting in Brisbane and said he walked away disappointed.
Well, I was very pleased to be invited to that particular meeting. The impression what I got from coming away from that meeting is one of real great disappointment with the Abbott government, with their decision, it looks like their decision, to defund Congress. What is so stark about all of this is, of course, they have handpicked in a paternalistic way an Indigenous Advisory Council and put money aside for it, but it looks like won't fund the elected body who's there to advocate and to represent Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, that is the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. So it's a very paternalistic approach taken by the Abbott government, and there was a lot of resolution and determination there at that particular public forum in South Brisbane about trying to take the fight up to the Abbott government to make sure that they do the right thing and continue the funding which the former federal Labor government committed, an extra $15 million to 2015-16, which would have given them the kind of assistance to get on their feet fully. So I was very disappointed with the decision of the Abbott government and very pleased to support Congress.
At the meeting, did you get a sense of anger and a lot of people confused as to why this money is not being released?
Well, confused because, you know, Tony Abbott said he was going to be the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, and one of the first acts they've got, of course, is to now effectively defund Congress, and Congress is going to have to make its own arrangements to continue on, I understand it will, but downsize its activities. But that allied with other things such as the taking away of $13 million from the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services, the $1 million taken away from Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Program, and the $7.2 million from the cessation of the Coordinator General for Remote Indigenous Services, all go towards adding up to a government that doesn't seem to be in touch with Indigenous affairs and Indigenous people generally. And the fact that they can take money away from Congress, but one of the first acts they did was to fund over $2 million to big mining companies and National Farmers Federation to continue to fight native title claims, a funding which we had taken away when we were in government, because we said that by this stage, native title is really involved in the legal process and embedded there. There was no need to fund those organisations which were effectively defending the case.
And why do you think they're holding back the money? Why aren't they releasing this money? Can you see some sort of parliamentary reason?
Well, I think this is what coalition governments do. They promise big in opposition when it comes to Indigenous affairs that it's all bipartisan. And when they get into government, they get rid of representative bodies. And we've seen that in the past. We've seen other predecessors before Congress actually go on the altar of coalition government cuts. And we're seeing potentially this one downsized dramatically in the pursuit of cuts, cuts and cuts by the Abbott government. And I think that's a retrograde step. We're about closing the gap within a generation in so many areas in terms of health, education, employment opportunities, and we proposed the Labor government in disability and injustice targets as well as higher education targets. And the coalition seems to have had no commitment to closing the gap. And in their Indigenous Affairs Council terms of reference, haven't even got any mention to closing the gap whatsoever. So Congress is committed to improving the lot of Indigenous people by being a representative body, advocating, in fact, at times even probably irritating government. But that's what they're there to do, to take up the cause and the cudgels of Indigenous Australia and to represent them to the best of their respective abilities in the various houses and stakeholder meetings that they'll undertake. So I'm very disappointed that the Abbott government's undertaken this course of action.
Shane Newman, how important is the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples to the Indigenous Affairs portfolio?
I think it's crucial, and certainly our position, if I was Indigenous Affairs Minister in this government, a Labor government right here and now, we wouldn't be cutting the funding. Our position was in government to fund it, and we did, across the Ford estimates, $15 million. In opposition, the coalition were sort of all over the place, very equivocal about the issue. And what we're seeing right now is reviews and cuts across the board. So, you know, Tony Abbott says one thing before the election and does another thing afterwards. And I'm sure Indigenous Australians today are saying to themselves, well, what sort of government is this? This isn't the government we thought there'd be. And Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples around the country, Australia's first people, should be honoured and cherished and should be supported in closing the gap initiatives, are going to find themselves in a position where their own peak representative body is actually defunded in circumstances where they need that funding to maintain the viability and the services they're undertaking in the past.
Have you ever spoken to the Indigenous Affairs, the Federal Indigenous Affairs Minister, Nigel Scullion, about this point?
Well, I've spoken to him on numerous occasions about commitments to close the gap, and I've called on him publicly to do the right thing on numerous occasions, and he knows exactly where I stand on this issue because I've made many public statements on it on radio, on television and in print. And so he knows exactly where Labor's position is, and I'm calling on him today to do the right thing and fund Congress. We think it's important to do so.
The Federal Member for Blair and Shadow Minister for Indigenous Affairs and Ageing, Shane Newman.
Speaking Out is on YouTube.
YouTube.com/ABC Speaking Out.
Welcome back. I'm Donald Johannesson and this is Speaking Out on ABC Local Radio and Radio Australia. I'm joined now by the Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Nigel Scullion. Minister, thanks for your time. Why hasn't the $15 million been released to the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples?
What previous government did, they indicated if elected, this is the budget that they would have. So it's not an actual budget. It's the budget if they were elected that they would have. They were not elected. And so that is not the budget. And that is not the forward estimates that is the reality. The forward estimates and the budget that will be approved will have to go through a number of committees and particularly a finance committee that's looking at a whole range of things, including commitments that was made by the coalition. So I've already met with Congress and I've explained to them that given that there wasn't, we didn't make an election commitment, given that they had over $8 million remaining, and given, from my view, that there was an understanding that there would be a period of time under which some $29 million would be allocated to provide their independent. And so we still have $8 million to go. I'm very confident that they will, in that time, become independent financially. And so I needed to indicate to them that it was, in my view, unlikely under the circumstances that a lot of other funding had gone, had not been approved, that this was unlikely to do so. And I sat down with Congress to discuss ways under which we could free up the funds to ensure that they could have the capacity to invest in any way that they wanted, to ensure that they had some sustainability into the future.
So you're saying that it might be released over time?
No, not at all. The release, or otherwise, is made by a finance committee. But it's unlikely, given the circumstance of the election, and that the Labor Party committed $15 million in the future to Congress. We did not. And it's unlikely, not under only those circumstances, but other issues. Of course, we have a very tight budget, Congress still have $8 million. So I said, listen, it's unlikely you're going to get it, but let's have a conversation about that, because they need to be in a position, if we needed, for example, to talk about fee-for-service and the independence and how that might happen. We also had some discussions about freeing up the funds that they actually do, rather than to be tightly controlled and trickled out. Perhaps we could do it in a way that freed those funding up so they could ensure that their future was independent.
Minister, how important is Congress to your portfolio?
Well, listen, Congress are an independent body. This is what people have got to understand. They are an independent body. They come and talk to me and they'll tell me things. We engage with them and they represent Indigenous, voice of Indigenous Australia, both domestically and internationally. Look, I think they've got some struggles and they would acknowledge that out of the 7,000 members, only 800 bothered to vote. It's not a vote of confidence in an organisation that claims to represent all of Australia. Look, they're going to be around for a long time. I'm really looking forward to working with Congress on a number of iconic issues. But, you know, they're a democratically elected body, but there are a number of democratically elected bodies around Australia, namely many land councils are democratically elected. I know the issue about land council and land management. I go to the land councils. I go to a variety of organisations around the country and they provide me with advice, amongst which is, of course, Congress.
Is the government trying to get rid of Congress by not funding them?
Well, look, the intention, well, first of all, the intention is, no, we're not. If government funds them, they're not an independent body. They want to become an independent body. And the initially, they've said, OK, we'll need $29 million. In that period of time, over nearly 5 years, we will become independent. They're treated as independent now. They can't criticise government. They can't provide fearless advice if they're simply paid by government. That's clear. That was one of their principal outcomes. And we're trying to ensure that they are an independent body and become an independent body. I'm quite sure they will be. And I know that Congress are going to be around for a very long time.
The Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Nigel Scullion, is joining me. And Minister, also $13 million has been taken away from Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander legal services, another $1 million from health programs. So if all this money going and not getting funded, surely it's going to be hard to close the gap.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure where you get those figures from. So everybody had a haircut, and that's a much smaller haircut than the $42 million. This is right across every aspect of government. Right at the moment, we're creeping up to a debt of $450 billion. And this nation has to be sustainable. Everyone's taken a cut. We're determined not to make a cut in areas that affect frontline services, and that's exactly what's going to happen.
Some of these frontline services, have they been talking to you about their issues?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have to commend a number of the organisations who have come to us and provide us some assistance in working through what is effectively a frontline service and effectively an advocacy role. There's two areas. There's a whole suite of work you do in frontline services, but as a part of that as well, we have law reform, so funds that go through the Law Council, that sort of stuff. And advocacy is lobbying, not for that service, but advocacy generally. So all services, all legal services have had that part of it because it's not frontline services reduced. And it's been the same with Indigenous legal aid. And I can confirm that there is no impact at all on frontline services.
Minister Shane Newman, the Shadow Minister for Indigenous Affairs and Ageing, has he spoken to you about his concerns about Congress as well and not being funded?
No, he hasn't got in touch with me about that. But he'd be more than welcome.
When he was in power, he handed down a report called Sport More Than a Game, which was outlining the benefits of sport in the Indigenous communities. Has your government looked at that at the moment?
Well, no, I can't reflect on any particular report, but I can reflect on the fact that we understand a very close connection with sport and Aboriginal Islander communities. We understand those programs that are working very well, whether it's the Long Foundation Down, whether it's Clontarf, that we're continuing to strongly support. And there are a growth of a number of other organisations and programs that link sport with education and educational outcomes. And we're going to continue to support those. In fact, I was in Meeka Farah yesterday over in the Western Desert, in Western Australia, the western edge of Western Australia. And to see the difference that organisations like Clontarf make and the attraction of sport, particularly the young men, and the re-engagement of young men is just fantastic. And of course, we're going to continue to support that.
The Federal Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Nigel Scullion.
Speaking out. It's loud and clear.
The Victorian and Paja Cup team have made their final preparations ahead of the National Cricket Tournament in Alice Springs. Speaking Out's Kerry Lee Harding caught up with the Victorian team captain Ben Abitangelo and Cricket Victoria's Annie Hatley. Kerry Lee first started off by asking Annie how the cricket team players are feeling ahead of their Impaja Cup campaign.
So we're heading up to the Impaja Cup and we're really excited this year because Victoria are actually setting up two teams for the first time. We've had our men's team around for many years, but for the first time we're sending up a complete Victorian women's team.
How did this come about, the women's team? Was there a need for this in community for women to be playing at this level?
Yeah, absolutely. We have an Indigenous Cricket Advisory Committee, so we've actually got a group of Koori people who provide us advice at Cricket Victoria, and this has been a strategy for a long time. We've been wanting to send up a women's team to compete in the Women's State and Territory Division. It's just taken a little bit of time to find us women to play at that representative level.
How do you think they'll go, the women's team up there in the Impaja Cup this year?
I actually think they're going to do very well. We've got some really quality players. A young girl called Natalie Plain, who plays for Melbourne Cricket Club Women's, and has recently played in the Under-18s Championships for Victoria. So, you know, we've got some really talented cricketers.
Victorian player and captain Ben Abitangelo explains how he feels about leading the team as their captain.
Now, I find myself very fortunate to head away with, 12 other guys that, who we have a great bond together with and have a great passion for the game and are representing our community. So, thrilled again to be named captain and, fingers crossed we can go well this year up at Alice.
It's not your first Impaja Cup. How many have you been to, Bruz?
I think this will be my fourth one.
How different is it for you, Ben, to play alongside your brothers in a cricket team compared to playing alongside your non-Indigenous brothers?
Yeah. I love playing cricket at all levels, but Alice Springs and the week away with the Impaja Cup boys could ask anyone, it's our favourite time of the year. So we really look forward to it and we really look forward to spending time with each other. It's a privilege for us and something that we're very grateful for.
And up there at the home of the Aranda people as well, do you get to mix with the local mob when you head up to Alice?
We do. We've got a few days. We've got a Wednesday, which is a cultural day, where we do different activities. I'm not sure what's on the cards this year, but last year, we were able to meet with some other Indigenous people up in Alice Springs. So it's great to hear their stories and share our stories.
You've already had the cap presentation. Tell us about the tradition and what this means to Cricket Victoria to have the Indigenous players presented with their caps.
This year was a particularly exciting year. The Melbourne Stars invited us to present the caps on the MCG. We were very privileged, one, to be on the MCG just before a Stars match, but to have such high-profile people wishing our team well before their campaign.
So plenty of training leading up, of course, to the Impaja Cup. How often do you train each week?
Because our guys and girls are based all over the state, it's very sort of independent onto the players to do their thing at club level. And then we try and get the squad in quite regularly in the lead-up to the tournament.
Yeah, Ben's actually being really modest. The boys have actually taken the girls under their wing very well. We did take 5 girls away last year, and you know, they are a group of big brothers looking after their young sisters, so they truly are a family. They've just got a lot more sisters to take away and look after this year.
I can see that you're wearing a Cricket Victoria t-shirt today. You've got a beautiful logo on there, Annie. Can you tell us about that one, please?
Yeah, it's designed by Trina Ham, who is an Aboriginal artist. She's from Yorta Yorta and lives up in Yarrawonga, and she designed it back in, I think it was about 2007, and it takes into account the 1868 team, which was all Aboriginal, that toured England, the Aboriginal flag and colours, and it's shaped in the shape of a cricket ball. The name Noongal Tongkat Tani was named by Aunty Joy Wandon Murphy, and it means success, win, belong. So she is the patron of our Indigenous cricket program, and she really reinforces that we are more than just a cricket team or a family as well.
Ben, where to now for you and your cricket? What aspirations do you have leading into the future? Would you like to play for Australia one day?
It's definitely everyone's, well, any young cricketer's dream to play for their country, but I think for me in the short term is to do well up at Alice Springs for the boys and the team. But yeah, I think when this season closes out, hopefully finish off well and then head across to the UK in the off season to do a season of cricket over there. So try and jam in as much as I can over the next 12 to 18 months and just see where that takes me, I guess.
You are truly modest, just heading over to the UK to play some cricket on the off-season. Tell us more about this. How exciting.
Yeah, it
is. Who are you going to play for? My goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I don't have a club locked in at the moment, but I'm in talks with a few different clubs in different leagues. So
this is not the first time Ben Abatangelo has captained the Victorian cricket team for the Impaja Cup. And Cricket Victoria's Annie Hatley explains how their organisation is currently supporting our Aboriginal cricket players.
Yeah, the wonderful thing about the Impaja Cup is Cricket Australia actually invest a lot in developing the Indigenous cricketers as well, particularly where there's talent. So, you know, Ben's been identified as one of those players. He's been lucky enough to get a scholarship, an Indigenous cricket scholarship, where he's been able to go to India to do some training at an academy. And he's also represented the Australian Indigenous cricket team. So that team has played in several tournaments, and every second year they travel. So they were up in Brisbane playing against in a tri-series this year. So, you know, he's actually done quite a lot. And it's one of those things where, you know, we really need to celebrate our Indigenous cricketers and how well they're doing in these kind of accomplishments, so the community have something that they can really be proud of.
Ben, take us back to that time you were in India. What was that like at the training academy? How different is, I guess the game of cricket is all the same, isn't it, no matter where you go in the world, but what was your experience like in India?
I got a little bit of a heads up from people on what India's like and, you know, what to look out for, but I guess it's something you just need to experience yourself. And I was blessed to have the opportunity that I was given by Cricket Australia to head over there to train with the Global Academy. So yeah, I spent 2 weeks over there training, played a few games, and then was fortunate enough with the Aussie team to head back over to India. I think it was about 6 months later, in which we played maybe, you know, 8 or 9 games. So the game of cricket is just, it's like religion over there. I think it's played on every single corner. Any bit of space, there's cricket playing. You know, on some ovals there'll be 8 or 9 games of cricket going on, so you could be fielding it, you know, square leg for your game, and then you could be fielding it, you know, bat pad for the game next to you. So that's quite ridiculous and bizarre, but amazing experience.
What a tremendous experience. And what was it, I guess, that you've learned about cricket when you did go to India that you didn't perhaps know before you left Australia? What new things did you learn over there?
Maybe just more the appreciation for the game and, you know, what it gives to people, you know, like myself and underprivileged people, you know, all around the world. So I think that, you know, it is more than just a sport. It's a place to play with your friends. You know, the sense of belonging is also there. And there's, you know, there's significant achievements that can be made from the game. So, you know, it creates a lot of opportunities, obviously played all around the world. So it's a real barrier breaker, I guess, you know, for different cultures and communities.
That's Ben Abitangelo, the captain of the Victorian cricket team for the Impaja Cup, with Speaking Out's Kerry Lee Harding. And you also heard from Annie Hatley, the Community Programs Manager at Cricket Victoria. That's the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Come like us on Facebook or join us on SoundCloud, YouTube or Tumblr by searching for ABC Speaking Out or on Twitter. I'm Donald Johannesson. Thanks for your company.